We're talking with Jorg Arnud of DreamlandResort.com about Area 51, what might be flying around out there. I don't know if you were aware that we had something called a B-21 bomber. We're going to hear more about that. Also, what about the F-117, the Nighthawk, stealth fighter? Supposedly that retired years ago, right? Well, maybe not. And what else is flying around out there? Do we have something that's invisible? That and more in this hour of Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. Jorg, I remember you telling me that, and I've seen it, right, your house, out your back door, you can basically see the gate into Area 51, right?
Yeah, I can really see the back gate of Area 51. And the real interesting thing about the back gate is that there's a number of Russian radar sites all around the back gate on the inside of the fence line. Basically, what they do is they want to know how good our stealth developments are. Are they good enough to fool the Russian radar sites? And what better way to test that than get a bunch of Russian radar sites, put them up, and fly our stuff over it and see if they can pick it up? And that's exactly what they do here.
The F-117 is retired, right? They put them all in mothballs at Tonopah, Area 52. That's what we heard.
No. They are definitely still flying. A few months ago, I've seen a couple of them fly right over Rachel. I mean, they don't even make any attempts to hide them. They flew in formation right over town and made a 180 turn and went right back into the test site. They are most of them have been retired. Most of them have been partially taken apart, prepped for storage. But there's several of them. We don't know exactly how many that are still flying.
What would be their mission? What would they be doing with them?
Yeah, why are they still flying? That's a good question. We believe that they are used as test beds for new developments, for new either new codings or for new radars of some sort or other new installations on the plane that they are testing. Of course, the F-117 is a very stealthy plane. It has a very well understood radar cross section. So if you have a new appendage that you want to put on planes, you put that on the F-117 and fly it over radar sites and see if it's stealthy enough. You know the F-117 itself has a very well understood radar cross-section. So it's a perfect test platform for new developments, for new parts or any kinds of attachments to an aircraft.
Yeah, it'd be fascinating to know how well it holds up, how undetectable it still is around the world.
Yeah, well, the F-117, we know that it can be beat by linking several radar systems together. You can beat it, and that's exactly what our enemies finally figured out. So we needed something better, and we have it. We have
what is it? I'm sorry. Go ahead. The F-22?
Yeah, we have the F-22 and the F-35. They both have, they don't look like the F-117 anymore. They don't look like, they don't have that typical stealth fighter look, which really only resulted from the fact that back then the computers were not sophisticated enough to create round shapes when they were trying to calculate stealth shapes. So it ended up being a somewhat faceted shape. Now the computers are much more sophisticated, so they can create better stealth shapes. The F-22 and the F-35 are both stealth fighter jets that are stealthier than the F-117 is.
Back to the B-21. Until we had our conversation some weeks ago, it was just a theoretical platform that I read about in aviation or aerospace magazines. But you think it's out there. You think it's flying. What is it that it can do that, say, the B-2 can't?
The big thing about the B-21 is that it can be optionally manned. That means that it can fly with a pilot or without a pilot, as an unmanned aerial vehicle, UAV. That's a great thing if you send it into battle and you don't have to worry if it gets shot down or if it crashes, you don't have to worry about recovering the pilot. Also, you can eliminate a bunch of systems that are only on board because life support systems for the pilot, basically. So you can eliminate all that, and you can convert that into payload. So that's a huge, huge thing. Another thing is that it is supposed to be, and you know, all this is just, this is not confirmed. It's not even really confirmed that it exists, but it is supposed to be supersonic, and it has a lot of the characteristics of the B-2, but a lot of the systems are further along on the next generation of the systems on the B-2. And really the big new thing is that it is optionally manned.
In the first hour, George Harris told us about a trip. He got to go into the Sheehan mine, the Groom Lake mine, and was able to see a gigantic structure, a new building at Groom Lake at the facility, and was wondering what it was. Is that related to the B-21, do you think?
Yes, it is. He's probably talking about the hangar that was built south of the south ramp in 2007. It's a gigantic hangar. It's the biggest structure at Groom Lake. And we believe that it was originally built for development of the Northrop RQ-180, that is a UAV that is still shrouded in a lot of secrecy. There's still not a lot of things known about this project, but it is flying and it is operational. And this developed into the B-21 development that is also a Northrop project. So this hangar originally housed the, we believe that it housed the RQ-180 originally, and now the B-21 development is taking place in that same exact hangar. In fact, they built another structure at the very south end of the taxiway. It is what we call a scoot and hide hangar, where a plane can taxi into while it is being prepped for flight so that overflying satellites cannot see it.
You had told me last time we talked that you get to hear things and sometimes see things at night in the desert, and you have no idea what's flying over Rachel, over the town.
That's true, yeah. I mean, at night, you hear an aircraft going overhead, and sometimes there's not even an anti-collision light. Normally, aircraft have all kinds of lights attached to them to make sure that they don't collide in midair. Of course, military planes only have these anti-collision lights. Sometimes we see something, or we hear something flying overhead, I should say, and it does not have any lights whatsoever. It is completely dark. And of course, on moonless nights, which they prefer for these test flights, you have no idea. You can't tell what it is. Well, I should say we have ways to maybe get a little better idea of what it is. We use radio scanners to listen to their communications, to their radio communications. And a few weeks ago, I was lucky enough to catch what I believe was one of the very first test flights of the B-21, or a prototype of the B-21, over the Nellis Ranges right here. I have it on audio. The audio clip is on my website, and I don't know if you have it over there. We talked about maybe you wanted to play it. It's on my website, and there's a lot of interesting things about this audio clip that we're still analyzing, but basically it sounds like the B-21, the call sign is Romeo, is flying over some kind of ground installations that they call Tango, and testing various systems on board of the of this B-21. So it's really interesting to listen to this. This is really aviation history in the making. This is the B-21 tested for the first time Of course, they use all code words, but we can kind of get an idea of what they're doing. They're starting to integrate all these systems into the B-21. In fact, in the audio clip, they talk about System 1 and 2 being no longer standalone, but now they're integrated.
You know, I had heard some years ago about work on a plane, some kind of a platform that was invisible, not just invisible to radar, but actually invisible. And I asked you about this when we chatted the last time, and you think you may have heard a little bit something about that.
Yeah, that was a very interesting audio clip also that I also have that on my website. It was several years ago when I heard this. And they were talking about this aircraft putting Windex on, Windex off. But Windex is really interesting. I really believe that it was a code for deploying some kind of plasma, some kind of a coating that may have made the aircraft actually visually stealthy.
Well, that'd be handy. That'd come in awfully handy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you know, you have the first thing was radar sales. We mastered that many, many years ago. The F-117 did really well with that. The next thing was to camouflage exhaust, and the B-2 does a really good job doing that. And then, of course, the next big thing is actual visual sales. If all of a sudden you're on top of your enemy and they can't even see you coming.
Windex is kind of an interesting clue, and I don't think you were aware of the old advertising jingle, but it used to be that the jingle for Windex was, it seems it makes glass so clear it seems to disappear. So that certainly would be consistent with what we're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, I did not know that, and when you brought that up, it really is an eye-opener. I mean, that makes it so much more convincing that that is exactly what they are playing with.
What about drones? We hear about hints that there are a variety of different kinds of drones being tested out there, including maybe tiny insect drones. I don't think you'd see them even from the back door, back gate. But do you hear anything about that?
Yeah. What they do is they have all these different developments, and what they try to do is they try to find out how can we employ them. They have large drones, and then they have smaller drones. And they are still developing basically procedures how to use them. I'm sure they have drones. I mean, it's not a matter of sci-fi movies anymore. They have these drones that are small as an insect, and that can basically fly into enemy combatants' homes. And there's no doubt in my mind that they have those. And the thing is now, how do we best use them? And that's a big thing that is going on both at Groom and also at TTR, figuring out how to best employ these UAVs.
Does the military monitor your site to see what's leaking out or how close you're getting to cracking some certain mysteries?
I'm sure they do. If I were them, I would. And, you know, it's free information. What we speculate on, and of course my site has attracted quite a large group of people that are very knowledgeable in the field, for which I'm very thankful. And you know, what better way of trying to find out what we speculate and what has maybe leaked out than monitoring my discussion forum, where people talk about all these things.
You know, in those circles, folks like yourself, like T.D. Barnes, some of these test pilots and engineers, they like to share inside information, but they only go so far. They don't want it to fall into the wrong hands. That's tricky business.
It really is. And you know, sometimes I find myself in the position of having to figure out, is this really something that I want to put on the website? Or is it something that I really don't know exactly what it means and it could have implications on national security and I really should keep it to myself until I can sort of figure out where it fits? What we don't want, we understand that the reason for the secrecy at Groom is not because they want to keep it from the American people, but they want to keep it from the enemy. And so there is a good reason for the secrecy there. And, you know, we are very curious. We want to know what's going on. We want to take a peek behind the scenes. But at the same time, we don't want to do anything that really compromises national security.
Have you ever been asked to take something off the site?
I have not been asked to take anything off the site. In the context of these road sensors that we dug up, I had a visit from a federal agency, and there were some warnings issued. But since I didn't break the law, nothing came out of it. And in one case, I was asked to not pursue a certain topic. I really don't want to go into detail about that. But that is the only time that I was ever asked anything, and I was never asked to remove anything from the site.
There's a reference on your website to your team, and it was included in the biographical information. Do you have a team that works with you?
Yes, we actually do have a team. It's amazing that when I first started this website, all of a sudden there were all these people that were interested in Area 51 and that just didn't have a place to network. And Greenland Resort became really a place where people can network and discuss things. And so I really have a team, a loosely formed group of people posting on the website, contributing material, moderating the forum, responding to questions in the discussion forum, and so forth. That, you know, it became a kind of a little community in itself.
I wonder if the Russians and Chinese also check it out.
Oh, yeah. I can actually see when I look at my server logs, I can see that I'm getting quite a few hits from both a... Well, I used to get a lot of hits, actually, from U.S. military domains. I don't get that much anymore. I think they're a little more careful. But I am still getting a lot of hits from Russian and not so much Chinese sites, but definitely from Russia.
I would hear stories about the heyday of the Nevada test site, of course, the atomic testing program. There were a lot of Russian spies in and around Las Vegas looking for leaks. I would imagine you get foreign... intelligence operatives in Rachel now and then, popping into the Alien, looking around town?
Oh, yeah. If I were them, I would. I mean, what better place to find out what's going on? And, you know, an interesting little tidbit of information is when people first started going up to Tikkabu Peak, when Freedom Ridge and Whitesides were closed off and Tikkabu Peak was the next closest view spot to see Area 51, they went up there to see if there's a view of Area 51 from up there, and they found a whole, somebody had already kind of built a shelter up there. So was it Russians? Who knows?
There's a camera up there, right? It's a, I'm using air quotes around it, a weather device or something like that?
Correct, yeah. There's a little weather device up there, and of course, it conveniently has a camera that can see the entire top of Tikkabu Peak now. For me, personally, that really kind of takes the fun out of it. You know, you're sitting up there observing the base, and they are observing you right back. So that kind of takes the fun out of things. But yeah, they can't take that land because it's not connected to Air Force land, and it would be unenforceable to make it off limits. So the next best thing for them was to have a camera up there and see who's watching them.
Well, I seem to recall them taking a lot of public land in the past, 89,000 acres of it to be exact, when they wanted to have a bigger buffer around the base. That was back in the mid-1980s. So I guess they're allowing us to still have that one vantage point, and for that, we're thankful. We're talking with Jorg Arnau about Area 51 and his website, dreamlandresort.com. When we come back, we open up the phone lines. Our final segment with Jorg Arnau coming up, talking about his website, dreamlandresort.com, which has had a remarkable spike in hits since the whole storm Area 51 base camp meme has spread all over the world. We'll get into what else is going on at Area 51, open up the phone lines with your calls and questions and comments. Jorg is not a UFO guy. He's not up on the, he's not a supporter of the, all that stuff, is not up on the latest intricacies of UFO theories, but you're welcome to ask anything that's on your mind, and we'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. Jorg Arnau, I'm not sure if you remember this. We were talking about the ground sensors on public land, and years ago, I had gone out there with a guy named Chuck Clark. He had figured out a way to find out where these things were hidden using a scanner, like a police scanner. So we went, jumped in his vehicle and went, brought a camera along, and he showed us. And he would detect them in bushes and under dirt, and then he'd get a little broom and sweep it away and show us these things. And we took video of it, and I went back and put it on the air. And I got a call from a friend of mine from the FBI who said, "What the heck were you doing out there?" This is before the story even got on the air. And he said, "Did you touch any of those sensors?" And I said, "No, just along there taking pictures." And the next thing I knew, the Joint Terrorism Task Force was in Rachel in these big black SUVs, and they went into Chuck Clark's house and took away his cameras and computers, and looked like he was going to be in big trouble for a while. Is that the incident that you're referring to?
Yeah, that is the same incident. Chuck and I actually went out. Before you took the footage, we went out and found a bunch of those sensors on public land. We dug them up and took photos of them, made sure that that we didn't damage anything, put them back together, reburied them in place. And while we did that, we were actually watched by security, by Groom Security, by Area 51 Security. So, you know, I figured if they really have a problem with what we're doing, they, you know, would have all kinds of ways at their disposal to let us know, okay, don't do this. They were just watching us. They never did anything. And then, as you said, next thing, when you did the special on Chuck, unburying these sensors, and next thing we know, the Joint Terrorism Task Force raided his house, took a bunch of stuff, including his monitor, which was really interesting. I don't know what information they thought might be in his monitor, but they took a bunch of stuff, and they also gave me a call at work and demanded to see me the very same day. After I got off work, I talked to an attorney, and by the time they got to my house, my attorney was present, and turns out they didn't have a proper search warrant, so they never entered my house. But it was definitely made clear that we overstepped a line and that we were never to mess with his sensors again. And the way they, the way they gave this whole thing a little more, made this a little more official, is they claimed that we stole one of those sensors, which of course is not true, but you know, stealing government property, that was the thing that they were holding over us.
Yeah, nothing, you know, really came I out thought of that was it. I always thought it was a bit of a stretch, that being out on public land miles away from the base. I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's what we figured. I mean, how do we even know whose that is? I mean, we see an electric device buried in the ground on public land 10 miles away from the base. How are we supposed to know that that is even related to the base?
At least that's what you can say.
Right, yeah. Well, of course, I mean, there's been road sensors, older generations of road sensors, way back in the 90s when people found them. So, of course, they want to know who's approaching, and they have all these sensors there. And we have nothing against that. We don't have a problem with that. We just thought, okay, this is a new generation. We hadn't seen those before, so we wanted to know how they tick. And in fact, I found the manufacturer, I found a whole website with all kinds of information about these sensors that has subsequently been removed after I published all that. So I know that these same sensors are still in use today.
What has happened to your website since this Storm Area 51 or Area 51 base camp meme has spread around the world?
I'm definitely seeing an uptick in hits on my website. I'm seeing new people posting in the forum, expressing an interest in my website and in what we do, and it's great to see. I mean, I love to see fresh people join us and bring fresh ideas to the field. So it's a really great thing that's happening in that respect.
Yeah, that's good. I hope they stick around and maintain an interest. You don't want to be just preaching to the choir, to the same audience.
Exactly. I mean, for a while there, it was really a static group of people that shared their interests, and now I see an influx of new people coming on board. And this whole Area 51 subject is really kind of all of a sudden speaking to the next generation, and that's a great thing.
Let's take a couple of calls. First-time caller, Jerry in Apple Valley, California. Good morning, Jerry.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you doing this evening?
All right, you're on with Yorg Arnu.
Yes. He was talking about the new bomber and what might be seen out there at Area 51. And means I live here in Apple Valley, the high desert. I'm sure you're
Oh,
familiar
yeah.
with it.
Yeah, you're in a good spot.
Yes. It was in 2016, about 1 or 2 weeks before they announced the contract for the new bomber. And it finally ended up in the direction of going toward, in a vector toward what would be out toward Area 51. But it started out at Edwards Air Force Base and went over to the California Logistics Center, which is the old George Air Force Base. And they lit that thing up with more lights than I could believe. You couldn't hardly see it. I thought it was a B-1. And then it made a came over to Apple Valley Airport and turned south and headed toward Crestline over against the foothills of Apple Valley. And at that point, it dropped down low to the ground and was basically following the contour of the ground. Now, my house is about 3,200 feet. The hill behind me is about 3,600 feet, and this is in between those altitudes, right on the deck. And my property is about 330 feet across, and the neighbor's is too. And this thing was covering most of our properties by the wingspan, although it has no wings. It's a what you almost like call a Delta craft, but it doesn't have a fuselage. It has a couple little bumps on top and bottom to give it a thing sideways. It almost looked saucerish, but it's not. And it's the only plane I've ever seen, other than a 71, that has the vertical stabilizers leaned inward down to about 15 degrees. Very close to it. It's a little bit longer than it is wide, probably about a 300-foot wingspan. Has a slight contour from the nose of it back to the tips of the triangle part of it. It's not really a triangle. And they're a bit rounded. And the back of it had a half a dozen square outlets on it. But the amazing, there was no signs of seams, anything like that. Had a lot of bright lights that they turned off after they went by the airport. And as they came over the top of the house, I thought it was a B-1. I was so startled, I forgot to get my camera. So I drew
a
sketch.
Oh, man. Any sound?
None. Absolutely none. But the amazing thing was underneath, if you were to draw a bullseye with about a dozen circles underneath each one of the, what you would call wings outside the slight bulge of the fuselage, and make those bullseyes into like dots and have each one of them glowing in a whitish-blue glow. This is something I have never seen. I've been around aircraft my whole life. I'm 70 years old. Came from a military background family. Family had airplanes. I won't go into lots of detail. There's some in museums. But anyway, this thing is the most outrageous thing I ever saw in my life. It's all black. But the vertical stabilizers on it was just absolutely mind-blowing. And the what appeared to be some kind of plasma jet or something coming out of the bottom of the wings. And like I say, they were shaped in like bullseyes and rings like that, but made up of dots, little holes that you could see a bluish white glow. And this thing was gigantic, George. Gigantic.
I have to say, Jerry, your voice sounds like it's coming from a cockpit. So it sounds like you know what you're talking about. It sounds like you might have a witness here. This is 2016 when you saw this thing?
Yes, sir. 2016, about 1 or 2 weeks before they announced the contract.
Yeah, that would be an interesting time. There's definitely a good chance that they were flying some kind of a technology demonstrator, that they were flying some kind of a prototype to prove that, yes, this concept is actually flight-worthy, and there's a really good chance that you saw a very early version of the B-21. Not really the B-21 as it's going to be when it's...
This is what I'm thinking, is a prototype of some kind, but when it turned up to Crestline, it made a turn to the left, which would have put it on pretty much a vector heading toward the 51 area over the stumps and out that way.
Yeah, and we do hear traffic coming in from the Edwards area or the Palmdale area quite a bit. So there's a really good chance that you actually did catch a glimpse of a very early prototype flight or a very early technology demonstrator for the B-21. That's a great sighting.
Yes, I was so startled, and I've got some very good camera lenses. And I was blown away because I thought it was a B-1. It was so thin. But as it approached me, I got to see what it was. There's no extended nose on it or fuselage or cockpit that you can see. It's just a very smooth design all the way down instead of being a triangle. Like I say, there's a bit of a swept into the from the nose back to the tail areas. But it is, if you happen to see this, I've got your dreamlandresort.com. Would you like me to email this to you or something? I got the sketch.
Yeah.
Take a look.
You could email that to me. My email address is webmaster@dreamlandresort.com.
Could you repeat that? I just got a pen out.
You can also, there's a contact us link on the website also. You can contact me through that or just email to webmaster@dreamlandresort.com.
Okay, I'll go through the site.
If you have any photos of that, I mean, it would be really interesting when the B-21 finally is being declassified, how close it looks to what you saw back then.
It will be amazing because this thing was on the deck, and I got a good reference point of dimension size and all the other things, and I have been around everything from Newport 11 to Sopwith Pups to, you name an aircraft. My whole life I've done rib stitching parties. I know what aircraft are, and I fly model airplanes. This thing is... it's got me nervous. I didn't want to say anything about it, and you were concerned about security, and so am I, with things. And that's why I'll just send it to you, and you can take a look at it. And that's why I didn't tell anybody or say anything about it till tonight, but I heard you talking about new bombers, and I thought now's the time to do it.
Jerry, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. I can't wait to see whatever you share with the org. Appreciate the call. We're going to go east of the Rockies to Larry, who is trucking in Indiana. Hey, Larry.
How you doing tonight?
All right. Good morning. What's on your mind?
My thoughts were back to the safety issues with the event and the amount of people and the location that far from a hospital. You probably need a makeshift hospital with antivenom and everything else. You have Mojave Greens out there, a highly deadly snake. Not to mention all the other injuries possible. And that's if everybody's behaved.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. If there's a traffic accident out there on these little two-lane roads, it could be really bad. Not only the whole area could be jammed up, but it's a long way to a hospital. You're absolutely right. That's one of Jorg's concerns and the concerns of law enforcement there. I've been exchanging messages during this broadcast with some law enforcement in Lincoln County, and they're tuned in tonight because they're very concerned about what's coming.
Yeah, that is actually one of our big concerns, head-on collisions on the highway. On Highway 93, which is a two-lane highway, I've had a number of close calls of people passing where they shouldn't have passed. I've had a number of close calls with almost head-on collisions. In fact, I had one today coming up to Rachel. And, you know, there is going to be head-on collisions. There's going to be accidents. The highway is open range, so that means that there's cars on the road. People don't know what open range is. We have cars on the road. At night, you can't see them. Every year, people run into cattle, but people run into cars. And, you know, I really would hate to see people get hurt in a traffic accident, and then there's nobody there to even... we may have one or two ambulances here, but what good is that going to do us if a really bad accident happens? God forbid, I really hope it doesn't happen, but we have to be prepared for it, and I don't see any indications that that is the case right now.
You know, I didn't mention this before, but there was a lot of different people have latched onto this to promote different products or causes or whatever, and the travel agency for Belize, the Central American country of Belize, had a really cool idea. They offered free vacations to anyone who lives in Rachel and who wants to travel to Belize during the Storm Area 51 event. I don't know. Does anyone take them up on it, or do all the residents want to stay there and protect their property?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think anybody would take them up on it. I really want to be right here in Rachel and protect my property, and I believe that everybody else thinks the same way. So, I know some of the part-time residents of Rachel that don't live here full-time. They come out here specifically for this event to make sure that nothing happens to their property.
We're going to go to Barry in South Carolina. My friend Barry, how you doing?
Hello there, George. What a pleasure, buddy. Hey, listen, I've got a good question for your guest. But I was just telling Donna, my buddy of mine and I are leaving the 13th, a week before the thing, in a big old $500,000 motorhome that he bought from Dale Earnhardt Jr., the ex-race car driver. But anyway, we're going to be in Vegas approximately Wednesday and Thursday before we try to ride out there. We're not going to try to stay because we know what the problem is going to be. But listen, is there any way I could stop by KLAS and just shake hands with you and say hello?
I'm sure we can work something out there, Barry. You send me an email. We'll figure it out.
I sure will, and thanks. And listen, for your guest, George, how do you get permission and consent to go visit Area 51 when you want to and do some research on it? I'm not sure how you get away with that.
That's not going to happen, but, Jorg, you can answer it. Thanks, Barry.
Yeah, I wish I knew how to do that.
Me too.
If I knew how to do it, I would try it myself. You don't get permission unless you have a need to know.
Yeah, I'd be willing. I've been waiting for the knock at the door, York, where they say, all right, we'll let you in. You can look around. You can open the doors. You can kick the tires, but you can't report on this anymore. And yeah. I don't know what the answer would be to that.
You know, I've often thought about that. If they told me, okay, we'll tell you, we'll show you everything that we have, we'll tell you everything that we know, but you'd have to shut down your website for it. I don't know if I'll go for it. Just like you said, I don't know.
Well, best of luck. We're hoping for the best with Alien Stock, with Base Camp Area 51, hoping for the best for Lincoln County and for you there, York. Thanks for joining us. I hope people will check out your website, dreamlandresort.com. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, George. Thanks for having me.
And thanks to my earlier guests, George Harris and Jeremy Corbell, and appreciation to my colleagues there at Coast, Anna Ramirez, Michael Cosio, Donna Walker, our webmaster, Greg Bishop, tonight, Dan Galante, and producer, Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. Good night, everyone.